And now we bring you Telefact. This evening, the College Women's Club brings you a tour of the University of Alaska Museum with Dr. Ivor Scarlin, Museum Director. Ivor, how many people would you say visit the museum each year?
Last year, that's 1951, we had over 12,000 visitors registered, and we are estimating that about 20% failed to register.
Well, where do all these people come from?
Oh, they come from Alaska, Canada, and the United States. More than 3,000 of them came from Alaska. Over 8,000 came from continental United States. Then we had about 189 from Canada. There were about 71 from our other foreign countries, most of them from England.
Mm-hmm. Well, what exhibits do you find are most interesting to these people?
This last year, I believe we found that the two bears we have were the most interesting. This one big one that was killed by Bob Reeve out at Cold Bay on the Alaska Peninsula 4 years ago, and another one that was killed by Arthur Johnson about the same place.
Well, is that this bear that's staring me in the face right now?
That's the one that was killed by Arthur Johnson and given to us by Mr. and Mrs. Webb of Vermont.
Well, what is he, a brown bear?
He's an Alaskan brown bear, the biggest land animal in the world.
Well, how much does he weigh?
Oh, he probably weighed about 1,500 pounds or slightly more.
He comes almost to the ceiling of the museum.
Well, he's about 10 feet tall or nearly so.
And, well, who caught him? How did they ever...
Well, he was shot with an ordinary 30 government rifle by Arthur Johnson.
Well, he certainly is very interesting. What about this little two-headed caribou I see over here?
That one was found in the Yukon Territory near Whitehorse a few years ago, and Mr. Guy secured it for us. Two-headed animals like that are very rare, but they are occasionally found. Incidentally, he died at birth.
Haven't they ever brought in any other two-headed specimens?
Not here, but they have found them elsewhere.
I'd like to introduce Mr. Charles Lucier. And Charlie has consented to tell us about these masks that are hanging here on the wall. Charlie, I'll let you take over. I can't ask any intelligent questions.
Well, I can try to give some intelligent information. I'm not sure. At the end of the museum, we have a large display of masks from various places in Alaska, mainly from Nunivak and from St. Lawrence Island in Bering Sea. The larger masks have semi-human faces with many appendages. They're very artistically made, and they're used in dances, as these masks are. The Nunivak masks probably were used in hunting festivals, I'm not sure. Probably in hunting festivals and such. The St. Lawrence masks are more simple, and most of them are fantastic human faces, representing perhaps evil spirits. They may have been worn by Eskimo shaman, Angatkuk. And on the other wall, we have another display of masks, which are mainly from Nunivak, and they duplicate the large display.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. They certainly are very interesting. Now that we're down here at the end of the museum, Ivor, can you tell me about these boats I see? They look like they're new.
The large skin boat was received from Barrow about 2 months ago. And it's an Umiak or an Eskimo whaling boat. It would hold about 10 or 12 people, but the ordinary crew was 6 or 8.
Of course, they can pile a lot more than 12 people in a diver.
Yes, if they had to, they could put in as many, perhaps, as 30 or 40.
Well, I've heard they do put that many in sometimes, don't
Dogs
they?
Dogs and other things.
Babies and everything else.
Camping equipment.
Well, is this one that's here one that was actually used?
It was used during the whaling until last year, when we got it recently.
Oh, I see. Now, looking back through the museum this way, I see a white moose.
The white moose was received quite a few years ago from the Chandalar country north of the Yukon. It was killed by Chief Christian of the Chandalar Indian tribe, and he recognized it was an unusual animal, so he skinned it out. It's an albino, it is rather an Appalachian, which means a partial albino. It has three black hoofs and a few black spots on it. On the other hand, we have one entirely white moose, but that's a cow and it doesn't look so good without antlers, so it's still hanging in the warehouse.
You mean the tourists aren't as interested in one without antlers?
No.
Well, this place is certainly very interesting to spend days up here, I think. Over here on this wall is a flag. Probably most of the audience know something about this Alaska flag, but would you like to tell us about it?
The original design for the flag of Alaska was produced by a schoolboy from Seward, Benny Benson. And then it was approved by the territorial legislature as the official flag of Alaska. Incidentally, Benny Benson is now living on Kodiak and he's still a rather young man.
Well, maybe he's listening to this program. Well, over here beside the moose, I see a lot of bones on the floor. Just what are they for?
Well, those bones are from extinct animals who lived here during the Ice Age. This part of Alaska was never ice covered, so we had a number of large animals that have become extinct since, for example, the mammoth, mastodon, big tiger, and other animals. These particular bones are of a hairy mammoth, which was an elephant about twice as heavy as a modern elephant.
Well, I believe if the listeners were tuned in, they probably heard Otto Geist talk about those bones last week sometime.
Yes, he did, and in fact, he has collected most of them from the AFI mining operations near Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Otto's the one they call the Bone Man, isn't he?
That's right.
Well, now we move over here to this case, and I see a lot of beautiful baskets. Would you tell me something about some of the baskets, Ivor?
Well, most of those baskets are from the Walking collection given to us by Mr. Walking of Cordova. Some of them are made on atu. They are made from grass. The atu baskets are not made anymore, and they are very finely woven. It's perhaps the finest basketry weaving in North America. Then we have some Indian baskets made from spruce roots or willow roots. They are also of excellent workmanship. You still can get some of them.
The colors on these baskets are from the different berries and things, isn't that the way the natives?
Some of the older ones had homemade colors, but some of the more modern ones are dyed with commercial dyes.
I'd certainly like to take some of these baskets home for my own personal collection. We also have with us today Mrs. Ann Rogers, who's going to tell us something about a new collection of paintings that are here in the museum. Anne, would you like to tell us about these paintings?
Yes, I would, Jerry. The paintings were presented to the university by Dr. and Mrs. Terrace Moore, and they are hanging up here in the museum for all to see who wish. The paintings consist of about 10 framed pastel portraits of individuals in the territory. They are, of course, natives. Mrs. Nina Crumrine is the artist. She's a very long-time resident of Alaska, and perhaps many old-timers will remember her. Her daughter Josephine is the famous artist who does the dog heads. Mrs. Crumrine depicts the racial features so well that it is quite easy to recognize the individual in her paintings. I think it's quite interesting to note the descriptions beneath each painting, and I thought perhaps you might be interested to hear one or two of them. Mrs. Crumrine wrote these descriptions herself. For example, Old Chief Cayenne of the once mighty tribe of the Tlingit Indians in southeastern Alaska has on his potlatch dress. His Chilkat blanket woven by the women is of mountain goat wool and tells whether he belongs to the raven or the eagle group. His hat is trimmed with the representation of the dorsal fin of the killer whale, supposed to be the great power of all native people. He lived at Ketchikan, and his totem stands before the Pioneer Hall there. He did not know his age, which must have been in the 80s. There's another painting, which is quite interesting to me, rather outstanding of the entire group, and that is of a Siberian Eskimo, a young lady, who has her hair cut very short and looks like a young lad to me. She's Mrs. Thomas, who migrated from Siberia about 15 years before this particular portrait was made. She was living at Gamble, about 35 miles from Siberia. She was beautifully tattooed. Now this process of tattooing is to dip sinew threaded through needles into soot and to draw it under the skin, leaving the soot behind. These Eskimos formerly often visited cousins in Siberia.
My, that certainly is very interesting, and these paintings are beautiful. They're really worth seeing for anyone who is interested in Mrs. Cumrine's paintings. Thank you very much, Anne. And now, Ivor, we still have a little more time here. And as I came up the stairs, I noticed some parkies that are in cases out here in the hallway. And can you tell me something about those?
Some of those parkies are rather unusual because they're made from bird skins. One of them is made from eider duck skins. The eider duck parkie has an advantage that it is very light in weight and rather nice looking as well. It has a disadvantage that it tears rather easily and is worn mostly by older men who don't do much hard work anymore. It's a kind of Sunday parkie, in other words.
It hardly seems possible that a parkie made out of bird feathers it would be warm.
Yes, the bird skin, or rather the feathers and the down, are about the best insulating materials that you can find.
Do people now, in present time, ever wear a bird skin parkie?
A few people among the Eskimos in the Bering Sea regions do, but it's not legal to kill migratory birds for that purpose.
Oh, so in case they accidentally kill one, then they can get a parkie.
Yes, they have many old parkies.
Well, I can't think of anything else. There's so many things out here in the museum that are interesting, that a lot of people would be interested in. There are a lot of pictures that you can look at, and a lot of ivory work. Oh yes, I wanted to ask you about this ivory tusk that's covered with gold. Tell me something about that.
That ivory tusk was presented to President Taft by the Chamber of Commerce in Fairbanks. It was made by a local jeweler who spent most of the winter preparing it. Then it was later given back to the university by President Taft's children.
It certainly is a beautiful thing. I imagine you have to keep your eyes on it, or the tourists
we do
would be very interested in taking that home. Well, I think we have come to the close of our program. I'd like to thank you, Dr. Scarland and Mr. Lussier and Mrs. Rogers, for these interesting notes on our museum. If any of you listeners are interested in visiting the museum, it is open from 1 to 5 every day during the winter time and from 10 to 5 each day in the summertime. Listen to Telefact next Tuesday evening, when our broadcast will be by three well-known men in the area who will discuss homesteading. You will hear Mr. Joseph Lawler, Mr. John Gustafson, and Mr. Bert Stimple, all of whom are homesteaders, and I think they'll be very interesting to hear their adventures in homesteading in Alaska. This is Jerry Shikora of the College Women's Club, and thank you so much for listening, and good night.